So this whole notion of service architectures, applications interconnected with number of services, whether it's a physical machine, whether it's a VM, whether it's a container, you know, containers have actually been around for three decades now. The question is, why didn't these explode in adoption? Step back and think about what's different now. Automation of the orchestration of containers. Because if you think about a monolithic application or these large scale applications, I might have 5-10 moving parts. And I got a little bit of automation or a little bit of scripting. It might be a little fragile, but I got a person over here that knows this stuff inside and out. And if something's going wrong, he can jump in and fix it. But if I've got a microservices app that's thousands of services that are changing on a daily basis, it is humanly impossible to keep up and manage that and scale it up and down to balance the scaling. What services are running on which systems? It requires orchestration. It requires automation.
This is the Tech Barometer podcast from The Forecast. That's Brent Schroeder, the CTO of SUSE, which was founded in 1992, the first company to market Linux to business customers. Today, one of their roles is to help businesses make transformations to the cloud. And one of the things we recognize at The Forecast is to go beyond the marketing talking points and chat with technologists working in the industry who have expertise and insights about how solutions and processes actually work. They're involved in complexities that require partnerships, such as Nutanix's partnership with SUSE. So in this interview, we pick Brent's brain on transformation, cloud-native computing, AI, and rapid change.
To get automation, everything has to be codified. That drives the ability to scale in all manners of that application. Scale in my velocity, scale in my number of users, scale in my number of locations. That's the secret sauce of the era we're in. Anytime something's not codified, it requires a manual step. So I could write the nicest CI/CD pipeline that's taking the code the instant the developer does it, and it's compiling it, it's building it, testing it, everything right up to the end. And then you say, wait a second, I got to do a security test and manually wire together the security settings to ensure that all the firewalls, all the boundaries, all the identity management's done. So all of that automation, all of that velocity, agility comes to a full stop while that manual step occurs. So what did I gain? It's these manual points that have been the inhibitor to this velocity. And Kubernetes was probably the snowball that started it. I had containers everywhere. Developers could go write containers all day long, but it wasn't being deployed in mass. I couldn't manage it. As soon as I got Kubernetes, this little snowball of Kubernetes, and started rolling that down the hill, I mean, it's just blowing up.
Well, Brent, I want to ask you more about automation in a moment, but I wonder if you could give your view on how the COVID lockdown has affected these transformations. You know, just off the top of my head, just recalling the headlines, you know, lots of companies that committed to cloud and remote working and such did pretty well.
Yes.
But I can't help thinking that COVID is shaking out the latecomers. What's your sense of that?
No, I think that's spot on. COVID, boy, it's going to be the final wake-up call opportunity for many companies. If they didn't realize that they need to be able to react real time to things and survive through that, even if they survived by accident, everybody needs to change and recognize how fast the world evolves. And if you're not capable of keeping up with the pace of change, then, you know, I think the demise of companies is going to definitely accelerate for any of those that are not there. I think the point is, what are you waiting for? It may not be perfect, but the fundamental foundational capabilities to digitize the business, to make the business more agile, to be able to respond, you know, at the speed of the economies today, is all there. Don't wait for COVID-21. Get yourself prepared and get prepared now.
Right, right. Well, we're going to hear the word transformation a lot in this interview. It's like we'll be overusing it ourselves.
Right.
But, you know, as you told me before the interview, that one of the things that you wanted to do was to get away from using vague buzzwords. So let's talk about what transformation actually means, what it actually means today.
Yeah, and this isn't unique to this transformation, but people often want to say, why don't you take this and lead this transformation effort and go over in the corner and, you know, pick two people to help you and come back when you've transformed us. And a whole bunch of people get left out. I think this is one of those that it's everybody needs to own some responsibility to be part of the solution. The business stakeholders buying in, application owners in the process for how applications are developed, the infrastructure team as a role in participating and putting in the automation and making their investments. So from the very people that are defining the requirements of the application, from the development teams that are responsible for building it, from the infrastructure teams that are responsible for having some place to run it, whether it's on-prem or in the cloud, wherever it is, then each has a set of responsibilities. And this absolutely requires new learnings and new skills. Building the applications and managing the infrastructure will be different. The tools are different. The development methodology is different. And so the company's got to buy into training, into hiring the skills that are necessary to take advantage of the new set of capabilities. And so that's really what I mean by it's everyone's responsibility. Because if you want to compartmentalize this and just put it off in a corner, then I think it'll fall short.
Well, when I think of new learnings, I think of one that is going to be integrated into all of this, and that's AI, right?
Well, I think AI is now going to start to enter the fray, because as the complexity grows, as I scale even larger, I get more and more occurring, you almost have to then have automation powered by AI. And so that's where I think the AI ops starts to come into play. You know, we were looking at it in an example of containerized storage. If I've got a storage file system that's distributed over hundreds of systems, and it's got thousands of microservices in there running, if I get hotspots as an administrator and moving it, I'm going to be so far behind the curve that it's not going to be possible to keep up. And that's where I think AI starts to enter, whether it's something like infrastructure with storage, or it's order processing with, you know, global 7x24 availability following the sun and making sure that I get minimal response times to my customers. AI has to come into play to maximize it, to take it all the way to the end, to cross the goal line.
And what's the role of AI? Is it to manage the process, or is it to basically help to look at the data and help IT understand it?
No, I think it's that. I think AI is identifying what needs to be done. It's the what. Because it can go through all of that information to say, okay, here's the triggering event. Here's what's occurred. This process needs to run. I need to move something from X to Y. So I think it's a participant in there with other orchestration tools working in conjunction with it.
You know, when we were talking earlier, you mentioned about some real world examples, which I want to get to in just a sec. But, you know, it almost always seems to come down to an old piece of software still on the factory floor. It's helping to run things. It's been there forever, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
What is it about those kinds of applications that have a target on their back, so to speak?
Yeah, I think it's where you're delivering your business value, right? If there's a monolithic application or this large application that's at the core of the business value, since the business is always changing, you're wanting to extend it. So it could be manufacturing. It could be, you know, your point of presence from interacting with customers. Maybe some monolithic banking ATM system that's just running, you know, off of this monolithic mainframe application. where you don't ever want to touch it.
I've heard that with point of sale apps where servicing them is got to be done with a very mission critical kind of attitude.
So I think it's those that versus the things that are more in the kind of in the back, you know, it's hidden away, tucked away someplace, and it's just turning the wheels, but it's not the business flow where you're always doing that optimization or interfacing with a key stakeholders and customers.
So I know you came prepared with an example of this, the idea of a monolithic application that gets moved to the cloud.
That was the one I've written down, is that one of our customers is a global manufacturer, 45 sites around the world. The challenge that they were having is monolithic applications in the manufacturing centers, and it needed to be on the factory floor due to latency. But the whole application, you know, required these large systems to be sitting in the factories. So they went through a study of what did the application look like? How do you break it down? And if they went to a containerized model, they actually could shrink the on-floor footprint significantly in the 70 to 80% range by using microservices architecture. And they brought a big portion of the application up into the cloud, left the latency-sensitive sides of the application in the factory. So now they've got a more centralized, easy to manage core processing in the cloud and a much smaller footprint, lower cost footprint in the factory that gives them the same degree of latency that's there. Then from an application standpoint, by decomposing it and having a microservices architecture, they can continually deliver new capabilities to the factory without bringing down the factory. So now they have lower downtimes, can bring new applications faster and have a lower operating cost in the factories because of switching from a monolithic architecture to a cloud native microservice architecture.
Well, you know, we talked earlier about speeds and feeds, and you mentioned that it's more than just about the hardware and the software. It's in the beliefs that people act on.
Exactly.
The culture. And in many ways, it's really not so counterintuitive. We hear about this a lot, how businesses have to respond faster than ever. There are new opportunities, new threats, especially after this year of a COVID lockdown. What's your thinking on how to respond to these things?
Yeah, there's the technology adoption, but the business goals aren't about necessarily the technical transformation. What they want is a business transformation. They want to be able to transform the business faster. I think this last year provides a great example, at least for us in the United States, right? On March 11th, you know, I just mapped out my 2020 plans and everything was great. On March 13th, everything was different for almost every business. Now, many of them were like, there's no way to adapt to some of the things that they were being asked to adapt to. Where other businesses had the processes in place, were nimble enough to be able to adapt, to be able to quickly deliver new capabilities or new ways of meeting with the customer, almost overnight gave them a competitive advantage. And so the business goal, I think, is to have that degree of ability to respond or take advantage of things that are happening around them. New entrants to the market, geopolitical events, you know, whatever the catalyst may be. But people want to be able to respond faster because just doing business, you know, the way we did last decade or two decades ago, et cetera, things just move quicker than that.
Right, right. So business goals are not necessarily what you're talking about in, let me put it this way. What you're talking about is that business goals have to do with the company's entire culture, which includes its technological capabilities.
Yeah, let me break it into two or three steps, because this first step is kind of the lift and shift. I've just got some existing things. I'm going to just lift and shift that to either traditional cloud, VMs in one, or they want to lift and shift it from a VM to a container, whatever it is, just that generic term. And some return might be found in that, but it's clearly not going to maximize the return. Then there's the, do I transform my applications and which ones do I transform? I recommend to companies to actually not start there if it's running. Start with something new. Do I transform existing or do I start with a new project? Because I've got to go through some technological transitions. I've got to go through some process and skill set transitions, etc. Companies are, I think, more successful quicker by finding a project, greenfield opportunity, where I can set it off, get the infrastructure set up, get a team that comes up to speed on it, gets trained on it. They're not blinded. Blinded is probably too strong of the words. They're not distracted about how it's currently implemented and how to shoehorn that into a new way of doing it. They can start with a clean sheet of paper and say, this is how I would build an application. They start to build muscle memory. They start to build a skill set of recognizing, and they can go through some fast fails, and it has no or less implications on the rest of the business. If I want a fast fail in a transformation, that's much more difficult because I've got an existing application running. And when I move it over, I've got some SLAs and expectations that I expect when I move it over. Failing fast with that is a tricky proposition. And so my recommendation is identify something to start with and go through a couple iterations, learn, build the team, build the skill set, be able to recognize what works and what doesn't work, and do that first. And then come back and look at what needs to be transformed in your second generation. And there will be applications where you'll see a monolithic application that would logically break down and be more efficient. Something that's got to routinely be updated and lifecycle managed, or new capabilities have to be put in. You know, we've got some of our case studies are this, is that a company having a manufacturing system that's built off of monolithic applications. And so every iteration is this big, long, planned out endeavor, with ultimately needing to stop manufacturing for a short period of time while they do this light switch from the old application to the new application, and then restart. Being able to put that into a cloud native has a big return, you know, because now I can start incrementally adding capabilities, et cetera. On the flip side of the coin, if I've got a monolithic application that I've not touched for a year, and I periodically got to security patch it or make sure the basic care and feeding done, but I'm not delivering new capabilities through it, et cetera, just leave it as is. Not everything has to be microserviced. Traditional monolithic apps can exist right with new cloud native applications, and there's ways to get them to integrate and work together. You know, if an application is working just fine, it's been there for 5 years, it's been there for 10 years, and I'm not extending and adding value to it on a frequent basis, then my recommendation is just leave it and let it run its course and add new capabilities outside that context.
Well, in listening to this, Brent, it kind of goes back for me to some conversations I've had with CIOs in the past few months, just about the buy-in that's needed, because it's a people thing where people need to get on the same page with the vision. It goes beyond the coding and the actual technologies. But, you know, what are people going to learn? What are they going to do with those learnings? And how does the company expect to integrate all that?
Yes, exactly.
You know, it sounds like that's kind of the whole thing that you're talking about here.
And being on the same page. You know, I was talking to a company not too long ago. And this particular company, fairly large company in healthcare, the CIO is responsible for the infrastructure, but not the applications. And the business units have the application developers. And they are fundamentally disconnected about how to achieve and what they want to achieve. And so that's a perfect case example of, we all have to kind of work this as a team across the organizations, be on one page on what the strategy is. There's not one right recipe, but everybody needs to be working from the same recipe.
Well, maybe you just answered this question, but I wanted to ask it anyway. If there was one thing that you wish businesses could hear about transformation, the transformations that we're talking about, what would it be?
I think the one thing that customers really need to hear, the businesses really need to hear, is that there is a tremendous opportunity to gain efficiencies in the delivery of new capabilities and in the operations of those capabilities, and that there is more to it than the buzzwords. You know, what we're seeing is the opportunity is very, very high. But it does come with some asterisks. Study it before you enter it, and the opportunity is there.
I'm thinking that one of the asterisks is it's not cheap.
Yes. One of the notes I wrote down, you must invest $2 to get $3 back. You've got to invest to get the return back, whether it's in technology, whether it's in people. And it's not just a physical cost or a capital cost. It's not a specific cost. If you go in with that understanding, then you know the returns are great.
Brent Schroeder is the Chief Technology Officer of SUSE. This is Tech Barometer, a podcast from The Forecast, an online magazine on technology and the people in tech. I'm Jason Lopez. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this interview, check out our other podcasts and print stories at theforecastbynutanix.com.